I'm Matthew Aaron, and welcome to The Matthew Aaron Show, www.thematthewaronshow.com. You can find us on Twitter, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, and on Facebook, The Matthew Aaron Show. Type in The Matthew Aaron Show, click like, and you'll be able to follow us there. Also, if you're a fan of the show, you can easily pick up all the previous episodes either at Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts. Spotify is where we've been doing some really great numbers, really great things. You can follow us there and get any episode that you want. Jessica Nicole from The Good Doctor from Fringe, she's about to join me. We're going to talk about all things self-isolation, The Good Doctor and their cliffhanger, where Jessica's character is headed, and what her career is going to look like mid-virus and after-virus. So here is my interview with Jessica, and I hope you all enjoy it. I will be back next week with Rachel Axler, Mark Pellington, Alan Loeb, Peter Tolan, Michael Whitehorn, and many more. Thanks for hanging in there with us. Enjoy this. I hope this keeps you company during your isolation. Have a good weekend, everybody.
How are you?
I'm so good. How are you? Nice to talk to you.
You too. Thank you so much for doing this. So there's a lot to talk about, I guess, because I'm The Good Doctor. There's a lot going on. So you, let's just start with, are you leaving the show or are you coming back in like recurring form? What is the update on that?
That's a really great question. So Carly did not die in the earthquake.
Right.
I do know that for sure, which is great. I was not asked to return next season as a regular, and I'm assuming that's because the romantic storyline between Carly and Sean's characters will not be, you know, moving forward in the capacity that it did before. Mm. So there is the opportunity for them to bring her back. I really have no idea what's going to happen next season. And of course, because of Corona, I don't, you know what anything looks like in the future.
Right.
But that's all I know for sure is that he didn't die in an earthquake. So I am feeling very happy about that.
Are people asking you about Corona because you played a doctor on TV?
Oh God. No, thankfully.
Okay.
Nobody is assuming.
I'm just making sure. I'm making sure people aren't like, Jessica, by the way.
You know, that's such a good question, though, because so many people definitely write me, and I'm sure I know they do this to all actors, and they do, you know, kind of correlate who we are with the character that we play. So I do get a lot of comments like, why would you break Sean's heart like that and stuff? And I'm like, You guys realize that I'm not that person. I didn't even write this, okay? So I would be surprised if people did write me and be like, so are these face masks really important for us since you play a pathologist?
That's a great question. I'm not going to ask you it now. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, how are you dealing with this? Obviously, your publicist is conferencing you. You're not in the same room, right? You're at home, I'm guessing?
No.
Okay.
I'm in my bedroom. Yes, on my bed.
So how are you, especially, you know, as a writer and a producer or director, I kind of like, I can keep busy. I can write scripts. I can take meetings. Mm-hmm. Actors, you got no auditions to go to. I mean, you can read scripts, right? Is that about it?
Yes. Okay, so here's the thing that a lot of people don't realize about actors. Now, I'm not talking about super famous actors like Viola Davis. I'm talking about the majority of actors like me, just regular run-of-the-mill people. The biggest obstacle that we have in our industry is learning how to fill up our time between each job.
Yeah.
Because we might have a job that lasts for, you know, 3 years, and then we don't work again for another 3 years. That has happened to me before. There are times when you only have a week in between jobs and you're super busy, and there are way more times. I mean, really, it's feast or famine as an actor. And so the biggest thing I think that we have to learn how to do is how to keep ourselves motivated and busy even when we're not, you know, actively being a part of production or on stage or on camera. And so I learned how to do this a very long time ago. I have always been a maker, and I use that term, you know, it's a very general term, but I make all of my own clothes. I make a lot of my shoes. I knit, I do woodworking, I build furniture, I do reupholstery, I bake, I cook, I do so many things. And a lot of the stuff that I've gotten good at has been because I didn't work for 3 years. And I was like, well, I got to figure out something to do with all this time that I have. So after Fringe ended, which was a show I was on for about 5 years, we shot most of it in Vancouver. And my wife and I moved to Los Angeles when it was over. And we were fortunate enough to buy a lovely, modest home. It's not like a huge, you know, incredible mansion or anything, but it's an amazing space for two people. And because, you know, I was living in New York City when I met my wife and when I started Fringe. So, you know, imagine going from an apartment that's about the size of a shoebox where, yeah, I had a sewing machine, but it was stuck in storage behind like 17 boxes of other things. So I just didn't participate in a lot of the hobbies when I lived in New York, because the city is kind of your hobby. You know, you're always able to go out and do stuff and hang out with people. So once we moved to LA and I had all this space, I suddenly had a whole room that I could dedicate to sewing. And I had a garage where I could put all my power tools. And now I have a storage area where I can put my pottery wheel and do pottery. So the strangest thing, I think, for me about quarantine is that my day-to-day life has not changed, like, hardly at all, which is really weird. This, for me, is just, like, the time in between a gig when, you know, maybe I don't have a lot of auditions. There are tons of times throughout the year where I don't have an audition for, like, a month or two. And so what I do, what I kind of feel like is my job, is to keep myself occupied and keep my brain working. So I sew, I make things, I participate in, you know, things that make my brain feel like it's working, you know, hard and learning new things. And so that's what I've been doing in quarantine. And there is even a weird feeling of guilt. Now, this isn't to say that I'm not stressed the hell out about my family members across the country, about everybody whose lives are, you know, having to be severely changed because of what we're dealing with. That's not true. I still have all of that anxiety. But my day-to-day is in the sun in California, you know, in Southern California. It's beautiful outside. It's I get to sit outside and do whittling. I get to sit in my driveway and work on my wife's nightstand table that I made her a couple of weeks ago.
That's so great.
So I have been really, really fortunate, to be able to have something to kind of channel my nervous energy into.
Yeah.
And when this is all over, when we're on the other side of it, you know, I don't know if it'll ever be over in the sense that it's like disappeared, but once we're on the other side and kind of getting back to somewhat of a semblance of normalcy, I don't know what my life is going to look like then, because the other strange thing about being in quarantine for me is that I'm, you know, keeping myself busy and I'm doing things that I really enjoy doing and I feel very calm when I'm doing them, but I cannot have any attachments to like the normal world right now. It's so weird for me to think about auditioning or like even doing interviews like this. Yeah. I'm like, we're still doing this?
Well, I'm glad now here's the way I look at it. Here's the way I look at it. And it leads me into my next question too, which is, I'm doing a lot. I used to only do this once a week, and then I made a couple movies, and like when you're making movies and developing and you're the writer and the director, you just don't have time to do a lot of podcasting. But the moment this hit, I'm like, look, one, yes, it gives me something to do, but two, it gives all these people at home that feel lonely, that are isolating without a beautiful wife like you, without a family like me, it gives them an opportunity to have company. They could feel like they spent 35 to 45 minutes with Jessica today. And that's kind of what we're doing here. And it leads me into the importance of, we're both members in the LGBTQ community, and we both use our spotlight to heighten the cause, if you will. Now, you as an actress, you don't get to pick every role you get to do. You don't get to play a lesbian or a bisexual and everything you get to do. However, you use your fame as a way to be an advocate. And then, you know, how important is it for you to work on shows that are diverse, that give you an opportunity, because very diverse show is The Good Doctor. Great yeah. use of diversity on that show. How important for you is it as an advocate of the community?
You know, I mean, it's absolutely important to me personally, but I feel like I have so little power when it comes to, you know, creating those kinds of projects, because I don't mean to minimize my role, but I'm just an actor, you know,
right.
I don't work in casting, I don't direct. And so part of me feels like I get to bring the diversity whenever I get cast. And there is something powerful about that. Like, even if the cast is, you know, all white, all straight people, not a lot of people of color, you know, not a lot of diversity in it. When I show up, I know that that's what I'm bringing to the project. So that makes me feel, you know, excited that I'm there. But obviously, I'm way more excited to work on projects where I am not the only person. I'm not the token, you know, queer actor or the token person of color or anything like that. So it's so funny for this show, The Good Doctor, I started playing Carly in season one. She was just recurring in the first two seasons. And I remember the very first, the first day that I showed up on set, it was just for a table read. I didn't have to work that day. And I really didn't know that much about the show. And so I showed up to the table read and I opened the door and I turned around because I thought I was in the wrong place because there were so many people of color. And I was like, oh no, this is the wrong show. I can't, there's like Asian people in here and black people in here. This must be wrong. And they turned around and they were like, oh no, this is the only show that shoots on this lot. You're in the right place. And I just, it has been a really long time that I've been a part of a show that was really diverse, that didn't, how do I say it? That wasn't like necessarily marketing itself as a diverse show. Like people, the Good Doctor isn't like, we got all kinds of people on our show, watch it. It's different than my role on like the show Underground for WGN, which is a show about abolishing slavery back in like the 1800s. Yeah. And so of course, you know, I expected there to be a very diverse cast, which there was, but for a show like this, that doesn't tout itself as diverse necessarily, it was really, really exciting. And I feel really lucky to have been a part of it for, you know, as long as I have. Whatever my future looks like on the show, I do hope that there is one.
Yeah.
But if there isn't, I feel really good about the work that I was able to do these past three seasons.
I think there's always going to be stories to bring you back. Now, I just want to really quickly on Instagram, you're at Jessica is Tri-Curious, which I love. By the way, I love your I love your Instagram. For those that haven't caught on within this, for those who haven't caught on in this interview already, because she brought up like a couple times, she loves creating things. She loves, you know, and your Instagram, you get to see all these beautiful, I guess the way to put it is makes or creations that you have. I just love it. I love it. And then also you're on Twitter at the Jessica Nicole. You can get followed there as well. I just love, I'm such a fan, and I don't mean to dwell on this, but your advocacy for the community is just I love how proud you are to be who you are, and I love how much you defend the community, and it means a great deal.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. It means a big deal to me too. I feel like in a lot of ways I'm trying to show up for myself in a way that, when I was a kid, I didn't feel represented. And, you know, I didn't come out till I was in like my early 20s. And I didn't really have a very serious conversation with myself about my sexuality till I was like a teenager. So growing up, I just didn't see anybody that really reflected all the potential parts of what I could be. And I mean that in terms of like my ethnicity and growing up poor and, you know, maybe being queer, maybe not, but knowing that being queer is absolutely an okay thing to be. I just didn't see a lot of that growing up. And so I feel like a lot of, you know, I think a lot of what all of us do as adults is try to show up for ourselves when we were younger. And in essence, showing up for our inner children that we have that are still having needs and wants that weren't taken care of at pivotal times in our lives. And so a lot of our adulthood is trying to, you know, be available for them and be like, look, it's okay to be these things. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you. And, yeah, I don't know if I do it for other people so much as I do it for myself. So the fact that it ever resonates with anybody else means a huge deal to me. It truly does.
Now, being on The Good Doctor, you get like the guest star of the week when you do these medical shows. Did you have like a favorite episode with someone you got to work with? Was there a certain episode that you really loved working with one of your guest stars?
Oh gosh. There were a couple, to be honest though. Like Carly's role in pathology makes it so that she interacts more with the other doctors.
You're in and out of the room a lot.
More than the Exactly. And I think it was episode 8, maybe, the one with all the zebrafish. That was the first time that she really got to have any kind of, you know, interaction with a patient that was at the hospital and put a face to the lab results that she was always getting.
Yeah.
And the people that were on that show, they were so lovely. Like, I've always had such a good time, but I'm actually, my answer for you is that my biggest joy was working with Freddie. And
really?
It seems like such a cop-out to say that.
No, I don't.
Of course you're going to say it's the actor, but he is just, he's so remarkable to me, and it's really hard for me to articulate why.
Yeah.
A lot of it feels like it's because he's not really like an actor, which doesn't say a lot about, you know, our community of actors, but he's just such a regular, like, down-to-earth person, and he never puts on a facade or tries to be what he thinks anybody else needs him to be in the moment. He's just himself, and his self is a really nice, dedicated, on the quiet side, but definitely with a great naughty sense of humor. He's just the kind of person that you would be friends with in real life. And so when you, you know, define him in that way and juxtapose it with your typical leading male actor, he's just so far away from that. Like, he doesn't have any ego that shows up on set. He always comes super prepared. He's so professional. He's so willing to work, but he also gives so much of himself in the scene. So it always felt like we were creating something together, like we were truly collaborating. And collaboration in film and television for an actor is like not very common, especially on a network television show when there are so many different parts of the machine that keep it going. And an actor's voice doesn't usually resonate that much on set when you have like a director who's just flown in from, you know, who knows where in between shows. And then you have these producers over here that want it to look like this. And Freddie always made it so it felt like we were kind of going back to basics. Honestly, it felt like working with a theater actor whenever we did scenes together. And the majority of my season 3 was working with Freddie. So he is hands down the best part of my being a part of this show. And he reminded me that, you know, through all the kind of glitz and glamour of what happens in this particular industry that we're in, we always have the power to bring it back to the kind of fundamental essence of just showing up and creating a believable scene with believable characters and having these emotions and, you know, whatever else drama is in the scene resonate in a really believable way. And so I will be forever grateful to him for that, because I didn't think there were a lot of actors like him out there.
I feel that you work with everyone's great, but the two people that just make it look like it's fun and real easy are Hill Harper and Richard Schiff. They seem like they seem like they just like show up, do their thing, and leave in such a seamless way. What was it like working with two guys that have been on every series ever and just have all this experience?
Yeah, right. I can't say very much for Richard Schiff, but
yeah.
Hill was, okay, this is also very funny. So the first time that I flew to Vancouver to work on this show, they put me up in the hotel, which has like basic cable. And he was hosting this true crime show on like True Crime TV or something. And true crime is one of my favorite genres. And so I was watching him on this show and I was like, man, my job is so cool. I get to watch this guy entertain me in the hotel, and then I get to like see him in a couple of days when I go to set. Like, that is just
so good,
so brilliant. And he has the kind of he has such an enviable career for me, I think, because he's had his hands in all kinds of things. He's one of those faces where I feel like most people know his name, but even if they don't know his name, they absolutely know who he is. They're like, oh yeah, he's the guy from that thing, and I've seen him in that thing.
Oh, for sure.
That's the kind of actor that I would love to be. I would love to have that legacy, to kind of be someone that who was always working consistently and who, you know, could show up as any character that she played. And you never, I think with Hill, you know his face, but you don't always associate him with a very specific character because he's a little bit chameleon-like in that he can play everything. And you're right, both of those actors, they're so seasoned because they've been around so long.
Yeah.
And that sort of, that's the kind of actor that, you know, that's the kind of career that I want to have. That's who I want to emulate. I want to just show up and do my work beautifully and have everybody be happy to work with me and then go off and do something else.
So, walk me back a little. So how did you get the role on this show?
So initially, this role, again, was just recurring. And I think even in the breakdowns, you know, for guest stars and recurring roles, it depends on the show. But in a very general sense, there is usually very little information about them because they have a very specific role. And it will be to either enlighten another character on the show or to make the story move forward in a very specific way. So a lot of times for recurring or guest star roles, it feels less about their characterization and what their role is in that particular storyline. And that is absolutely who Carly was in the beginning. There was, I think her breakdown said, head of pathology, she's cute, or something like that. You know, not a whole lot to go on. And so even my scene for my audition, it was like three lines, just one scene.
Wow.
And so when you have, you know, when you have a small role like that, I am thankful to go in for those roles. I'm thankful to have those roles because I want to be working on shows that, you know, seem to be doing something good in the community, seem to have some kind of voice or point of view. And so beyond that, I'm not like, well, you know, how old is she or where did she go to school? It's whatever. I understand the role that I'm coming to play. But what was cool about this was that after I had done a couple of episodes, it was clear that the writers and the producers were interested in seeing a little bit more of her dynamic between, her dynamic with Sean. And so in the second season, obviously, they brought her back and then they brought her back a little bit more. And then she started to have more of a personality. And it's something that I would say we all kind of built together, because with recurring and guest roles, they don't know how long they're going to be around. They're not going to, you know, have this whole long character synopsis for a person that might only show up for three scenes in the entire series. So I understand that and was, of course, really flattered when they decided that they did want to see more of her. And then they did develop a backstory with her. And then they did get to show her, you know, build up a relationship with Sean's character. It's probably one of the highest honors, I think, that you can get as an actor, is to show up in some small capacity and then have them keep bringing you back because they like the work that you're doing so much.
Yeah, I agree. When you could take a three-line audition, turn it into a recurring character, and then turn it into a regular character, that makes you feel like you're doing good work. When you go in
it
for
really
these,
does.
Yeah, when you go in for auditions and you get three lines, how do you prepare for that as an actor? How do you deal with that?
Oh my gosh. My biggest tip is to don't make a meal out of two bites of food. Just go and show the work. You know, the tendency, I think, is when there's not much there, is that you want to show everything that you can do and you want to put it all out there and you want to give them options. And I know I keep saying this, I'm sorry to be so repetitive, but there's a very specific role that most recurring and guest stars have, particularly in an episodic TV show. I was talking about this to a friend of mine recently who hadn't gone in. He's a television film actor, but he does most of his stuff on stage. And he was saying, you know, I went in for this audition and I feel like I did a great job because I like had emotional highs and lows and all these things. And I didn't even get a call back. And I was like, you know, that's not about you and your talent. That's about knowing exactly what your place is in that episode. If you're brought in for a guest star role for one episode of television that has like, you know, a case of the week or a crime of the week, something like that, your role is so specific and there really isn't a lot of nuance that you can bring to it. They're looking for somebody who can immediately convey everything they need to about this character because they're not going to dedicate several episodes to fleshing out who it is. So once you kind of, as an actor, once you have a conversation with yourself and understand that you are not the most important thing here, it's the story that's the most important thing, I think it's easier to book those guest star and recurring roles. So for this particular one for Carly, when I went in, I just went in and I did the line. The scene was really funny and there were some funny moments to it. So I certainly played those, but I couldn't give them more than what was on the page. I think that you end up kind of backing yourself into a corner when you do that, because it doesn't allow for the casting directors and whoever else is in the room looking at the tape to kind of see how they can mold you into what they need you to be. Yeah. Now for bigger roles, you know, for series regulars or recurring roles that are going to have a big story arc, you know, obviously go in and show them what you got, but you just have to know what your actual place in that episode is going to be.
So you finish up your role on this. What's next for you? What's Jessica looking to do in 2020, other than survive coronavirus and get out of the house
that
again?
That was going to be my first answer.
Right. What happens professionally once you can open the doors again?
Oh, goodness. I truly don't know. Once we finished wrapping The Good Doctor, I actually had a few audiobooks lined up to narrate, which I was super excited about.
That's so cool.
I know, because I love doing those. And I did my first audiobook maybe a year and a half ago for a podcast that I also narrated called Alice Isn't Dead. It turned into a best-selling novel, and then did an audiobook for it. And I just had an absolute blast with that. So at the beginning of March, I recorded my next book called The Betrothed, which is the first in a trilogy. And I had another one I was going to do, and then they ended up having to recast it because I don't have an at-home recording studio. All the things that I have in this home, but not an at-home recording studio.
You have to build one. You have to build one.
Exactly. I have to freaking build one for myself, yes. So, you know, they recast it and they gave it to somebody who does have an at-home recording studio. And I was disappointed because I was really excited to do it. But I understand that that's what's happening right now. You know, in terms of where I am and where everybody else is with work, it's okay. It's something that I will come back from. But having said that, there is this huge part of me that feels so anxious about what work looks like on the other side of this.
Sure.
I think part of that is because nobody really knows when life is going to kind of start back up again. And with productions in general, there's so many people working in very confined spaces. So if we, you know, in thinking about us having to social distance, like we'll be able to leave our houses, but we're going to have to be super safe and social distance within the next several months. It makes me really curious about what production life is actually going to look like.
Yeah.
And so I had this whole, I actually probably should write this as a short story, but if I don't do it, somebody else take this idea. I had this whole idea that we're going to have papers that say like whether or not we've had the virus, whether or not we're immune to it, whether or not we've been tested, and that people are going to use that for hiring practices. So like if you're safe, quote unquote safe, that you'll be able to get more work than people like maybe who haven't had it or don't know if they're immune or whatever. Like that's my biggest fear, is that our health in more ways than it already is, because obviously we live in a very ableist society. And so able-bodied people and neurotypical people are always going to be getting like jobs over people who are not identifying as those things.
Yeah.
But it just scares me about how our health will end up playing an even bigger role in the way that we move forward in terms of like, you know, work and community and stuff, like having to have permission to participate in things. That part, you know, I'm not saying that that's going to happen. That's just a fear. That's my anxiety, moving very quickly ahead.
I think And I know this isn't a popular answer because everyone's worried about their pocketbooks, but as a independent filmmaker, I think when we come out of this, now's the time for independent filmmakers to step up and have a moment. Because I think what we're going to be looking for coming out of this, and this is just me, and I could be totally wrong, but and I think this is going to be what it's like with TV, too. I think they're going to be looking for cheap and easy. I think they're going to be looking for lots of projects, but I think they're going to be, you're not going to be seeing as many $10 million an episode TV shows. I don't think for a while, at least. I think the economy is going to take a hit. And I feel like right now is the moment where independent filmmakers like myself and others, especially if you're a minority LGBTQ, now is going to be our moment when we get out of this to be like, here's the project you said you wouldn't make because it wasn't big budget. Well, now you ain't looking for big budget. And this is it. Because I do find in our communities that is – the kind of projects we tend to make is real life, down to earth. You know, we do these projects from the soul. They usually don't involve $100 million budgets. And the excuse you always hear is, oh, well, we love this, but you know, we're looking for $20 million movies. Now's the moment. So that's what I'm hoping happens out of this. I'm definitely going to be pushing for it. That's for sure.
I absolutely can see that. And, you know, the one thing that I have thought was that, oh, well, if, you know, there's not a ton of like huge productions that are happening once we're on the other side of this, it is going to leave us so much more time to create our own content. And I think it was maybe 4 years ago, my friends and I, it was a completely queer production. We basically wrote like a 30-page feature film, and we filled in all the gaps with improv, and we filmed it in my home because it was free, and there were only 5 actors, and they were all friends, and none of us got paid, and it's called a micro-budget movie, but I think we spent a total of like $4,000 or $5,000 on it, like it was really cheaply made. And you know what? We won awards at film festivals, big film festivals, like Outfest. And it was such an awakening for me because at that point I had only been involved in like, you know, major network television and film productions with a lot of money backing them. And even at that point, I had thought that indie only meant like $1 million. Like that's still a lot of money. And so we kind of took it back so far that we were like, nobody's going to watch this, but our friends will. And that is the only thing that matters because we're having fun and we think it's an interesting story. And, you know, we've got 5 days, let's just do it. And so for it to kind of take off like it did was such a nice reminder that I don't have to give up all my power as an actor and a creator and wait for someone to cast me or wait for somebody to pick this up or whatever. We do have the power to create good stories. And I think you're right, because again, the cast was completely queer. Everybody who worked on our production were people from our community. And it was also completely women led. Actually, one person has come out as non-binary, but at the time it was all women, all queer women. And it felt like I just have never been more proud of myself and my community of people.
It's incredible.
And it felt special because, like you said, we were from a marginalized community and we still made our voices like really loud and be heard. And you can see our film on lots of streaming platforms. You know, like we did get recognition from the broader audiences saying, yeah, I guess you guys did something cool.
Yeah, where
and
can
so
we
I
see
think
it?
You're right. I could totally see that. You can see it on Amazon Prime and Vimeo.
Great, great.
Yeah, it's called Suicide Kale.
All right, go check out Suicide Kale on Amazon Prime. And then when you're done, check out my film, Landline, and you will get all your queer needs in like one sitting.
oh, I'm going to check that out. Cool.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, I'm just happy to see that you still have this great energy about you, this positive beaming energy. talking to you is fantastic. I feel like in person you'd be like a light. So I love that. You know, the only thing that is, and this is something I don't know if you do or not, because you were on Fringe, which was this huge show, but do you do the comic conventions and stuff? Because I feel like that's going to change very soon.
Oh my God, you're absolutely right. So I did, I used to go, I think I've been to maybe 16 or 17 sure. by the time I did my last one a couple of years ago. I'm not, you know, it stays pretty current. So if you're not on a sci-fi show, you know, it kind of like the opportunities trickle off.
Sure.
But oh my gosh, you're right. They were so, I think that that's the reason that people liked them is because you were having this really intimate experience with, you know, somebody whose work that you really yeah. cherished or whatever. And yeah, and every time, like obviously way pre-corona, but I was only giving fist bumps to people.
Pre-corona, I remember like yeah. half the celebrities have Purell at their station and they're like, no offense, you know? But I host a lot of panels there, and it's just crazy how much interaction yeah. you have with people. And now that there's this virus, we don't have a vaccine for it yet. We're in quarantine. Yep. Even when we are allowed to leave again, I feel like one place that's going to change like crazy are these comic cons, these conventions. Yep.
You're absolutely right. And even like I got so like germophobic about that stuff after I did several and would get sick afterwards.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, it's a lot of people. It's a huge space, but there's tons of people in those spaces. And, you know, you're exchanging goods and photographs and pins and stuff like that. And so it just felt like a thing to keep me safe personally. But now you're absolutely right. I think there's going to be a huge cultural shift in the way that we interact in really big spaces where there's like, you know, tons of people there.
Yeah. Well, Jessica, I'm so happy you did this with us, and best of luck
to you
coming up. Please stay safe and healthy. For everyone, you can watch The Good Doctor. It's on demand. You can catch up on the last season. A huge earthquake ends at the season, and who lives and who dies. So and then you can see Suicide Kale on Amazon Prime. So check that out. And Jessica, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much, Matthew. This was such a pleasure. I really appreciate it. And
yeah.
I can't wait to go watch Landline?
Yeah, Landline. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Landline. That's
okay,
right.
Okay, cool.
Thank you
okay,
so
cool.
much.
I'm going to go check that out. Thank you.
Yeah, I hope we get to catch up in the future. Thank you.
Me too. Have a good one, Matthew.
You too.